Hey, podcasters. Welcome to the program. It's Tuesday. A great, great show for you. I mean, we talk about Elon Musk and his go ahead and arrest me attitude, which I absolutely love. We have Cheryl Atkinson on, who is talking about General Flynn and what's happening in Washington and the lies of the media. And then we have an hour with Megyn Kelly, who just did the Tara Reid interview about accusing Joe Biden of sexual, not harassment, sexual assault. Her interview is fascinating. And we get into also coronavirus and people that are protesting the coronavirus. All of that on today's podcast. Don't miss a second of it.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
America, welcome to the Glenn Beck program. Glad you're here. There's a couple of things. I got to stop and talk about Elon Musk because I love this guy. I love him. Now, remember, Elon Musk is a global warming guy. I mean, that's why he's planning on going to Mars, because he's so convinced about global warming. Okay, so he's not exactly a conservative, but he is great. I just love him. He's an entrepreneur. He's Tony Stark. Let's be honest. He is living the life of Tony Stark and using his money in all the ways that you would hope to use your money if you were really, really rich and a genius. Well, he is in an argument now with California. And California has said you can't open your factory. Until when? When are they saying the 20th or something like that? And he says, "I'm opening it up. I'm opening it up today. This is today. If you want to arrest me, go ahead. I'll be on the line." So now California is really, really pissed at him because he's defying their orders, and he says, "I don't get authority from you. I don't know, some little coronavirus commission. Nobody elected you. No." I'm running my company. And so he's opening up the doors today. Apparently, it has been crowded for the last few days as they started to come back online. And he's threatening to move to Texas or Nevada, which, I mean, you can move to Nevada, but you will be welcomed here in Texas, Mr. Musk.
Yeah, I understand that Newsom kind of gave him the go-ahead. And then it was some non-elected county official that said, "No, you're not going. You're not restarting that." And he's like, "Who are you?" "No, I'm going to restart it." So I think good for him. It's unconstitutional.
Oh, I hope they arrest him. I hope they do. They won't. Mm-hmm. I hope they do, because he has the money to make it into. He's not going to shut up. And he's not going to take it.
You know what else is kind of cool about Elon Musk is he's the only billionaire hobo I know of. He says he's going to be without a house. He's getting rid of all of his possessions. He's supposedly incredibly cash poor. He's just a billionaire on paper. I mean, he doesn't have, apparently, a lot of cash flow. At least that's what they say. And that's what he has said in the past. So it's kind of interesting to see the way he operates. He talks down his own stock. He talks about not having any possessions ever. He's a really interesting guy. Interesting cat.
I love him. If there was anybody I could interview today, my dream interview probably would be Elon Musk. I find him one of the most fascinating. He's kind of he's a Nikola Tesla of our era. And I think misunderstood and maybe crazy. I don't know. I don't think so, but maybe crazy. And I love that about him. And he embodies the American entrepreneurial spirit. He is a Nikola Tesla in all the ways that, you know, on all the things that implies, and maybe even the crazy part. But I hope they arrest him, because he won't sit down. He will not sit down.
It's fun, too, because the left now hates him just for the reasons we've been talking about, that he insists on opening his factory again. And that
I can't take their zero tolerance policy.
Yeah. Ugh.
You disagree with one thing on the left and you're out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially this one's really interesting to me, because he seems to be you know, he's against the lockdowns, right? And the president is still, you know, he has obviously called for 6 weeks of lockdown. And he said he's been defending it on Twitter recently that it was the right policy to do. And yet now opposition to Trump is unacceptable to the left, which is a fascinating development, right?
But because wait a minute. This isn't this. I hate this argument. I heard this on Fox News of all
I'm
places.
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. Jeez, gosh.
Well, you did. I'm a little like Elon Musk. I may be crazy. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Donald Trump. Yes, he had the 6 week lockdown, but all of the rest of this stuff is happening because of the states. Donald Trump is not responsible for all of this stuff now. All of these lockdowns are being run by the states, not the federal government.
Right. I'm just saying Trump agreed with the policy for 6 weeks, right? He's now trying to get people to open up. And he's saying, and he's, by the way, even after the lockdown expired, it was criticizing the Georgia governor for doing too much too fast. So, I mean, I don't think Trump is in a situation where he has been advocating this. You know, the media tries to make him out to be this crazy radical character where he's just like, everyone go out and sneeze on each other. Like, that's not what he's done at all. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. And so, you know,
totally reasonable.
And what Musk is doing here is he's been saying, like, you know, free America, open it up, blah, blah, blah. And like that is in opposition to what Donald Trump is saying, which usually immediately guarantees you're on the right side of the left, because whatever Trump says, if you're on the left, you have to disagree with it. What is funny is they just are reading into his mindset and saying, well, he doesn't actually believe it. He doesn't actually believe in
that lockdown the entire time.
But
he's actually come out and said that this is fascistic. What's happening is fascistic.
Musk.
So he's not. I don't think he's meaning that about Donald Trump.
He's meaning about lockdowns. Right now, his immediate concern is Newsom, who's gone further than Trump. But I mean, I don't think the difference. I don't think the space between Trump and Newsom is fascism. They both have said, like, hey, this is a big time. We need to close down the economy. You know, like, I think it's for whatever reason, because Trump's at times rhetoric says, hey, we want to open this up and we want to get out there. When are we going to get out there? By Easter. But then he himself had the lockdown several weeks past Easter. Right. Like, he's looking at this, I think, and trying to judge it with the best scientific, you know, knowledge that's coming into him. And Musk is saying it's time. I think it is time. This is Texas. We've started to open it up, and I think we've done it.
Are you wearing
masks
outside?
Was
you wearing masks outside?
No.
You wearing masks outside?
No, I don't wear them outside.
Do you wear them inside?
I wear them into a store.
Oh, do you?
Sometimes. Oh. You know, I mean, it depends on the situation. I feel like it's interesting because I've been to one store with 100% mask usage.
Really?
Whole Foods. It's the only place I've been into that has worn
all the granola people.
Right, and that's probably the absolute safest place to not wear a mask, because everyone else is wearing a mask.
Yep.
If I go, there's some stores where no one's wearing them, and that's actually the place you probably should wear them, which is kind of counterintuitive.
Did you guys see the video of the real estate agent in Miami whose client apparently went against her better judgment, the realtor's better judgment, and didn't wear a mask or gloves to an appointment? Watch this. You're just a tad upset about it.
Video, because I'm a little pissed off at the simple fact that people around this town don't wear the mask, don't wear their gloves. I just finished showing a house right now. The lady was pissed off because I asked her to wear a mask. Like, seriously, woman? And then she's coughing 2 seconds later. Like, it's no big deal. We're in this because of like that. Because people out there on their boats doing all their bull partying. No, I'm not jealous. No, I'm not. Because you know what? I have a yacht. I could go out with my friends and party, but there's a time and place for everything. And now is not the time and place. Now is the time and place to be taking care of yourselves and the people around you. There are people dying. There are people in hospitals risking their lives because of like you, who won't wear your mask, who don't wear your gloves, who don't wear practice social distancing.
There's somebody who bought in
completely. Yes, Miami's a party town, but the truth is, you know what? There's a time and place for partying and everything. Now is not the time to party. This only in Miami, only in Dade, only in Florida. Let me do it for a video, for a meme, for a TikTok. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, or we're going to be quarantined all the way to September. And we may be spending New Year's in our house because of you out there who don't wear your mask. And you know what? I give a God breath. You guys get pissed off at me, don't like me. And you know what? You delete me off your social media. You'll probably be doing me a favor. So I don't need like you. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves so we can get the out of our house, you dumb.
Wow. Here's what I would suggest.
Yeah.
You shouldn't drive while while recording.
Yes.
She's got one hand. You could see it in her glasses. She's got one hand on the steering wheel and the other one on her phone. What is, you know, it's effing people like you that are killing people on the roadways.
I really thought at the end that she was going to crash into something at the end of that video. I thought that's what I was waiting
great.
For.
It would have been great.
You know, it would have been great.
I guess, well, it would have been appropriate. You know, I find this I find this also intriguing as she is yelling about this. I'm guessing she didn't sell the house. I'm guessing she left the house.
I'd say that's a good
and
guess.
Didn't And I wonder if the woman would have said, "Okay, let's sign a contract." I wonder if that rant would have happened.
No way.
Probably not.
No way.
Right.
And the other thing is the glove situation. When you go into the store wearing gloves. And then you touch something, you're already you're contaminated right there. You need to change the gloves after you touch anything. So if you have enough glove changes with you to change them out after every single touch, like you're touching a cereal box that has been handled by 40 other people.
Right. Well, yeah, and the glove thing isn't even science, right?
It's
it's much better to actually have touched something bad and then wash your hands than to have it on your gloves. Mm-hmm. Then you take it off. A lot of people would touch whatever is on the outside of their gloves if they don't take it off properly. And then what? Use that as an excuse to not wash their hands. Well, you should wash your hands after that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mask thing, I think, you know, the science on that is, you know, look, there's a good, they say about 70 to 80% drop on how many droplets could get through if someone sneezes in your face, basically. Which is, look, it's
how often are people sneezing in
very
your face,
infrequently
though?
But I mean it only takes once, as you very recently found out.
I did, for my grandson, who sneezed directly in my face. And yes, I did get sick.
Mm-hmm. It's better than having your daughter vomit in your mouth, which I've had.
And yes, that's nasty.
That sounds worse.
It was definitely worse.
No mask is helping you from that, I will say.
Yeah. No, Daddy, I have a tummy ache. Well, what does it feel like? Yeah, it was not good.
I mean, you know, as far as I know, Glenn, you haven't been out at all. So you probably don't have to worry about masks because you haven't gone out to dinner or anything. You haven't taken advantage of any of our Texas freedoms yet.
I'm really liking staying at home. I'm really loving it. There is a chance. If there wasn't a camera in my house that I had to show up every day, I might look like Howard Hughes at this point. I may have just a long beard and really long, creepy fingernails and be like, I'm just peeing in bottles now and leaving them outside of the door.
It's a very attractive image.
Yes, I know it is. I'm enjoying it. And I can't take the mask thing because, I mean, I'll wear the mask if we have to wear the mask, I'll wear the mask. But it's ridiculous because nobody knows what they're doing. Did you see? I saw somebody yesterday. Where was it on TV? They were wearing the mask and they were talking, but they had the mask just over their mouth, not over their nose. And I'm like,
that's not doing you any good.
Doing?
Yeah,
that's not doing you.
And you know what I love when they take their glove hand and they pull down the mask so they can talk to you. Well, you've just contaminated your gloves and your mask.
Right, yeah.
So why do you have them on?
No, my favorite are the people like at Home Depot that are wearing gloves, and their gloves are like black from wearing them all day.
Yeah. You're keeping it around longer. The glove thing makes no sense. You can't wash your hand. You can't wash the outside of the gloves off. So the stuff that you pick up stays there forever.
Mm-hmm.
If you have just your hands and you touch something that's bad,
wash your hands.
You're frequently washing your hands and it gets removed
and you're okay.
Every so often.
Right.
It doesn't happen with gloves.
The mask thing
at least makes sense, I think. If you can obviously screw
it up. Yeah, the mask thing makes sense.
But the gloves make no sense. No sense.
Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, podcast you can hear wherever or listen to him live before this broadcast on the Blaze Radio Network. Thank you very much, Pat. I want to thank Patriot Mobile. In addition to their generous support of Mercury One during these troubled times, Patriot Mobile has gone above and beyond to help Americans stay in touch with their loved ones during this lockdown, and they've done it by lowering their prices even further. Right now, their U.S.-based team is standing by to design with you a customized family plan that can start at only $25. Now, Patriot Mobile shares your values, and they'll never charge you for hidden fees. And unlike Big Mobile, they're not going to send your hard-earned money to places like Planned Parenthood or leftist causes. So you can get the same reliable nationwide service and support a company that shares your values, supports our Constitution, and puts people before profits. Switching is super easy. Right now, when you join their family of freedom-loving Americans, they will waive the activation fee, plus send you a free gift with the offer code BECK. That's 972-PATRIOT. You're going to save a buttload of money. It's patriotmobile.com/BECK. 972-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/BECK. You know, if you ever listen to somebody and you agree with everything they say, turn off the radio or look for some other voice, because that person most likely is lying to you. The thing I like about Cher Atkinson is she takes on both sides. She won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Investigative Journalism for The Business of Congress, which included an undercover investigation into fundraising by Republican freshmen. She had two other Emmy nominations for Benghazi, Dying for Security, and Green Energy Going Red. It was around that time period where she fell out of favor with the people at CBS News and elsewhere. She has kept her good name and her integrity, and she joins us now, Cheryl Atkinson from FullMeasure.news. Cheryl, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. How are you?
Good. I read your story this morning, and I wanted to get you on because I wondered if you could take us through what is happening with this so-called Obamagate and kind of explain it in layman's terms and tie it to your story that you just wrote, which is incredible, about all of the news inaccuracies over the last few years.
I think that a lot of the conspiracy theories we heard about 4 years ago that I didn't put much stock in because they sounded so far-fetched in some cases have to a large degree proven through documentary evidence and testimony to be absolutely true. No one's more surprised than I am because, again, it just seemed like who would do that? And what I'm talking about is...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, help me out on which conspiracy theories, because that's what everybody says about both sides. Now, it's conspiracy theory.
So this one is the notion that when President Trump became a viable candidate for office and threatened both the Democrat and Republican establishment, the money system, and what's perhaps even worse, threatened to bring in Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who, let's say, knew where the bodies were buried and the intelligence community knew he was going to upend abuses and corruption that he knew about, there became a desperate attempt to make sure that that didn't happen. And that included attempts to try to find anybody surrounding the Trump campaign who maybe had been to Russia so that it would be easier to justify getting a wiretap against those people through which they could capture President Trump's communications and try to controversialize him and make sure that he didn't serve as an effective and complete president. I think that's what we've seen. That's why they targeted Flynn. You remember President Obama met with President-elect Trump in the White House. And before any of these conversations that Flynn had with the Russian ambassador that were controversial, before any of this happened, President Obama reportedly told Trump, don't hire Flynn. Why do you think that is? But I think it's pretty clear now based on, again, the documentary evidence that there was an effort when Trump hired Flynn anyway to go after him. And as the handwritten notes of one Department of Justice official said, do we want to get him to lie? Is that the goal so that we can get him fired or get him prosecuted? And that's exactly what it appears they did.
So, Cheryl, take me through the argument or the back and forth of the president knew about this, the president didn't know about this, and why that's important, these meetings that the president was involved in.
Which meetings are you talking about? Sorry.
The meetings at the White House where, you know, I think it was Clapper said, no, I didn't inform the president. The president didn't know anything about this. And we now find out that they did have a meeting and they were talking about the FBI investigation was coming to an end, and he said, no, keep it open, keep it going.
Ah, President Obama. I'm sorry, I was thinking President Trump.
Oh, yeah, Trump. Obama. Yeah,
I have not dug into that yet, so I just don't have any particular insight. But the question that's been raised by the new information that's coming out, 3 to 4 years later, by the way, after we should have had it, this is public information in my view. It goes to the heart of potential criminal wrongdoing and national security, but this was kept hidden even by people working for President Trump for the past couple of years until now. But what we're getting at the heart of now is how high up this went. There's been a steady stream of documentation from the Inspector General and documents and congressional inquiries as to the participation in wrongdoing, including in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, improper wiretaps by FBI officials, the doctoring of a document by an FBI lawyer. Well, we know all that now, but how high did it go? Did all of this happen sort of under the radar without the top authorities knowing? Or did President Obama play a role in helping to direct this? Did his top national security advisor and officials, what role did they play? I think we're finally getting at the heart of some of those questions. And I would tell you that in general, it defies credulity to think that all of this was being done at that level, the way it was being done, without the knowledge of top officials.
So what were they, when you said Flynn wanted to go, Obama would respond, no, the guy's a racist. I didn't like the way he was. He spoke about Islam, et cetera, et cetera. What are the bodies that Flynn would have known that Obama didn't want uncovered?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things I know about, and this is before 2016, through my sources in the intelligence community. I knew that they were wiretapping political figures and journalists, not just me, other people. A lot of people improperly, and I would say illegally, being monitored, perhaps blackmailed, or at least leverage used over people, you know, that knew they were being monitored or had been monitored. These are really big things that I think have been going on for years. Edward Snowden revealed some of this. Some of it, a little bit we found out about with revelations about the Obama administration getting subpoenas against Associated Press and that sort of thing. But I think a far greater danger, there were more under the table efforts, not even legal subpoenas that were being secretly, you know, given against the press. I think there were a lot more shenanigans being conducted inside our intelligence agency for the past 15 years. And top people, Brennan and Clapper, head of the director of national intelligence and head of the CIA, on multiple occasions that I've documented on a timeline at CherylAtkisson.com, provided false information to Congress. They were part of spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee, but then providing misleading information when asked about it, then having to ultimately admit it and apologize. I mean, if you think about it, it almost starts to, when you look at the timeline, look like they were spying on practically everybody. Who weren't they spying on? This is not allowed under our Constitution and in our country. And I think Flynn knew a lot about a lot of this. And going into 2016, I was told this was one thing that many people inside the intelligence community, the bad actors, not the good actors, but something that they feared.
So this is the worst case scenario, I think, for all Americans. I don't care if you're left or right. I don't care if you love Obama or love Trump. It doesn't matter. This is awful. And leads us into a completely dystopian world. Do you believe there's enough there? And are there any journalists out there that are part of the mainstream that this will affect enough to where they will say, we got to put partisan politics aside. This has to be uncovered.
I just think a lot of the deep diggers who would view things that way and just go where the facts lead, that's not being done at a lot of the mainstream news organizations anymore. They're just taking handout propaganda or comments from anonymous sources on one side or the other and publishing them. That's not a lot of real work or digging going into this. This takes real work. I've seen people like Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept and a couple of other places, including some left-leaning publications that have actually dug deep because their interest lies in intersects in some cases with the interests of the right, where these privacy invasions have happened, no matter who's committing them or these constitutional violations. Mm-hmm. I have seen some deep digging, but it's not being done at what I guess you would call the traditional mainstream outlets.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
World-renowned journalist. She is probably one of the best interviewers I have seen. I'm trying to think of somebody that was better. I can't think of anybody that is better at doing interviews. She always gets to the bottom of it, and I think that's because she was a lawyer. She was a litigator for 9 years before she went into journalism. Welcome to the program, Megyn Kelly. How are you?
Hey, Glenn. Good to see you.
Oh, good to see you. I didn't know you were going to be on Skype as well. Great. Glad to have you.
But I made it for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, Megyn, I watched your interview. I've watched it twice now. I honestly, very rarely do I say there's no question left on the table, because I wanted to try to get her, and I think she chose you instead, obviously. I thought I had some real questions for her. You handled all of them. How did you find her personally?
Well, personally, she was delightful. You know, she was perfectly kind, warm. She's been through the ringer. You could see that, too. This is not a woman of great means. And, you know, when I got to her, she had, I think, the night before hired, well, not hired, she's not paying him, but gotten a lawyer and a PR person for the first time in this whole thing. So she, for the first time, felt a little bit more steady. You know, she's had no protection and she's out there. You know, she's on a very thin reed and she's getting it from all sides and she's got no team, Glenn. You know what I mean? There's no natural constituency backing her. So she was a little, I don't know if the word's fragile, but maybe just a little unsteady.
So how shocked do you think she was? Because I say this to people all the time. They say, I want to come out and take a stand, or I just want to agree with whatever. And I'll say to people all the time, are you really aware? People don't know Megyn unless they've lived your life or my life or Tara's life now, how horrible the media and social media can be. I mean, it is a business of destroying people now.
Oh yeah, it's
how
brutal.
Shocked. How shocked was she by that, and what kind of damage has been done to her?
Well, I mean, I think she was expecting to have her credibility questioned. You know, you better be if you're going to come out and accuse somebody running for president of something as serious as this. She's no dummy. She understood she was going to take hits in terms of whatever. You know, is she credible? Does the story make sense? But, you know, her bankruptcy got posted online. They're going back to 1993 and looking for, did she bounce a check? It's like, you know what? I put myself through law school, and you want to go back and look at my bounced checks, you're going to find a lot of them. You know, it doesn't mean I'm not a credible person. A lot of us were poor when we were in our 20s. And so I think that part of it has been rough. Somebody posted a picture and her address of her daughter, who's, you know, in her 20s. And that's messed up. She's getting death threats over this. Just, you know, the media is totally irresponsible and people are so nasty and social media is so awful. So I think she's a little rattled, but, you know, all things considered, she was holding it together okay.
So has the Me Too movement changed anything? I mean, if you accuse the right person, it's good. If you accuse the wrong person, it's not. I mean, has it changed anything for women? I mean, because if I were a woman and I had a story to tell, I would be terrified after seeing what's happening to her.
Well, I will say this. I think political accusers, you know, accusers in a political race get it the worst, right? It's like, not that like the Harvey Weinstein accusers had it so great. For God's sake, Rose McGowan had, you know, secret agents following her and trying to dupe her. But if you come forward, whether it's Trump, Biden, Roy Moore, you know, as an accuser in an election year, you're going to get it worse. Because as we've seen with Tara Reid, even constituencies that might naturally support you are now suddenly very suspicious of you. So I think that's rough. But to your question about the Me Too movement, it's done some good. I think there's no question it's done some good in calling attention to the fact that, you know, there is harassment in the workplace. Most women for most of time have just gone along with it because we kind of were told this is how you make it in the man's world. And so just sort of putting that asterisk in people's minds, like, this is a thing, and you know, you should probably at least listen when a woman comes forward and actually put the idea in women's heads that they can come forward if they have something, all good. But the pendulum, you know, which was over here when it came to women's allegations, like when I was in college back in the early 90s, if you came out with a rape allegation, you were probably going to be dismissed a lot more easily than you would be today. So the pendulum needed to swing. But like so many of these things, we've overcorrected to a point where now the accused, they haven't been getting due process. You can make a single allegation that's unsupported and ruin a guy's career over 30 years. That's not okay either. You know, we got to get to a place where we settle, where the women are taken seriously or the men accusing. They're heard, but due process is afforded to the person being accused. So if Tara Reid is the person who can do that, by exposing the hypocrisy of some of the Democrats who have, you know, with the believe all women nonsense, which was never sincere, then she's done good for the country. And, you know, we'll see whether her allegation has impact beyond that.
Okay, so I want to come back to the listening versus believing and the impact on politics and stuff in a second. But I want to go, you know, you just said if you made a rape allegation in the 80s or 90s, you would have been in trouble. And what they probably would have done is slut shamed you. And I noticed a little bit of this with her answers. First, stop wearing short skirts. And she said, I wasn't wearing short skirts. I was just wearing stuff off the rack. But then I thought one of the most uncomfortable things that she said, because I think she knew she felt the old slut shaming kind of thing about her underwear. And how, without getting graphic, how Biden gained access. And you could see she was uncomfortable with that because of her mother, and she didn't want to tell her mother that. And that makes sense to me. And it makes sense to me that she wouldn't want to say anything, and it makes sense to me that she understood the slut-shaming thing, that she's asking for it. Look at her skirts.
Well, I'll put my lawyer hat on now and argue it both ways, right? You can say she was uncomfortable having that discussion because she didn't really want to reveal to the world that she was wearing what I think she was saying were crotchless underwear to work at the U.S. Senate because she was supposed to see her boyfriend later, and that was her story. Mm-hmm. Or you could say she seemed uncomfortable because she wasn't telling the truth, because she had to explain how he could gain access under her skirt so quickly. And, you know, there's a belief by some on Capitol Hill that all the women back then in 92, 93 were wearing pantyhose, that it was either an unwritten rule or an actual rule. You had to wear pantyhose on your legs, and therefore Biden couldn't have done this. So, you know, that's up to the viewer. Mm. I really believe over the course of a 40-minute interview like that, they'll walk away with a good sense as to whether they're seeing a truth teller or not.
Did you see a truth teller or not?
Well, I'm not going to opine on my own personal belief because I want to continue reporting on this case. And I shouldn't choose a side. I mean, I definitely have my own belief, but it's irrelevant.
So is it the Karen person that is not a real name? Can you tell me I don't want to know who she is, but tell me about her and why she is important and why she's not comfortable coming out.
Okay, so Karen is by far Tara Reid's best witness. Tara has, you know, a corroborating witness that is far more compelling than anything we saw from Christine Blasey Ford. I mean, far more compelling.
Far more.
I mean, there's no contest, and anybody who tells you differently is lying to you.
Nope.
Karen is the person who was friends with Tara on Capitol Hill and was in Ted Kennedy's office as a young intern at the time. They befriended one another. And Tara told Karen contemporaneously with the alleged assault that it had happened. And according to Karen, Tara's never deviated in a single detail over 30 years about what allegedly happened that day. Now, I've spoken with Karen at length. She's a professional. She's smart. She's on it. You know, you talk to her and you're like, okay, this is a very credible person who's been successful in her life.
Mm-hmm.
But at best, what that establishes for Tara is that Tara told Karen this happened. It doesn't prove that it actually happened. And so, you know, you would have to believe there's something a little wacky about Tara, right? That she would back then be making a story like this. But Glenn, That happens sometimes. Sometimes that does happen. I'm not saying it happened here, but people do need to allow for the possibility that Tara did make that up and has been telling witnesses for 30 years because it's a story that somehow meant something to her and she decided to spread it.